the ARZ File, the ultimate Cardinals podcast with Nate Lundy.
Time to talk Cardinals. We do that with the managing editor of RevengeOfTheBirds.com, part of the SB Nation, Seth Cox, with us. You find him on Twitter at SCoxFB. Seth, let's start here. There's a lot of expectations on this team after a very successful season last year. So many pieces still in place. How's this team handling the expectations that are sitting on their shoulders right now?
You know, Nate, I don't think anybody has higher expectations than the Arizona Cardinals do for themselves. So I think that is kind of where they are at writing this right now. You know, Bruce Arians, for those that watch the All or Nothing series, you know, Bruce Arians, his goal is to win a ring. He doesn't really have any other goals, and he's really embed that into the team and into their philosophy and their makeup. So the expectation from outside, I think for fans, it's just a little bit different because, you know, especially Arizona Cardinals fans lately, they're used to playing the, oh, nobody believes in us card. You know, nobody thinks that the Cardinals can do it. And now it's like, oh, wow, this is different. Everybody's expecting us to not only be in the Super Bowl, but possibly win. This is new. But the team, I think, under Bruce Arians, is just, they're locked in. Like, they know that there is no other mountain to climb for them other than winning the Super Bowl. So I think that those expectations are there amongst themselves more than anything else.
Seth, were there any surprises for you on the depth chart as we get ready to start the season?
Yeah, they kept 9 offensive linemen and 9 defensive linemen. They've had some injury issues and poor play at times at on the offensive line. I know they brought in Evan Mathis. They have a rookie in DJ Humphrey starting at right tackle. He didn't play a down of real football last year, kind of a redshirt year for him. And then AQ Shipley has been a guy that's been consistently replaced everywhere he's been with Bruce Arians. So even though he's the quote-unquote Arians guy, he's been replaced consistently. Mike Iupati has been dealing with kind of a knee issue. It held him out of 1 preseason game, nothing big, but I think that kind of goes to why they kept 9 offensive linemen. And then along the defensive line, it's the same thing. Robert Kimdiche, Frosty Rucker, both were out 3-plus weeks of training camp. So Josh Morrow, Ed Stinson, and Olson Kier was the real shocking one, all making the roster as kind of depth guys that can be effective in a rotation more than anything else. They're definitely not guys that you want playing, you know, 60-plus snaps a game, but they're guys that can come in for 15 to 20 snaps and be really effective. I was shocked, though, that, you know, the way that they built that, especially when you remember they play a 3-4 and they kept 9 true defensive linemen. I mean, nobody really plays outside backer in that system.
When you look at this team, you know, obviously when you have those kind of high expectations, it means that people know that you've got the talent at the different positions. If you had to name it, Seth, is there a position group that you do think is weak or that you do think has some challenges and needs to get better?
I think the secondary as a whole has some issues that they need to figure out. You look at the way that they are constructed, and they have Patrick Peterson and Tyrann Mathieu, and then the rest of the group are cast-off journeymen or guys that have never lived up to expectations, or young players in the case of Justin Bethel and Brandon Williams at the opposite cornerback of Patrick Peterson. So the question becomes, can these guys all live up to the expectations? They invested heavily along the defensive front to improve their pass rush, to, you know, coincide with impacting in a positive way the secondary and the coverage units. So I think that's going to be the key, and it's going to get tested right away. Even though it's Jimmy Garoppolo in week 1, they're still going to get tested having to cover tight ends. The quick, hurry up, you know, kind of New England offense that they run with those short, quick routes, it's going to be a test right away on Sunday Night Football for them.
RevengeOfTheBirds.com is the website, part of the SB Nation. Seth Cox on Twitter at SCoxFB. Seth, when we look at this team, we look at the depth chart. I know you talked about the secondary side of things. One of the positions that I have a question mark about, so I'd like to know from you, is at tight end. Do you feel that they've got the talent there? Is it just a position that they don't lean on very much, and therefore it's not as vital for them? Talk to me about that position and the depth that's there.
They have Jermaine Gresham and Darren Fells listed as the starters, and those guys are both kind of just guys. I mean, they're nice players. They do their assignments well. They block well. They're expecting big things from Troy Nicholas. This is his third year. He probably shouldn't have been drafted in the second round where the Cardinals picked him, and that's because he probably shouldn't have come out in his junior season after only 1 year at tight end truly at Notre Dame. You know, he's that big move tight end, that specimen that everybody's trying to find right now, and the Cardinals are expecting that he's going to finally make the leap in year three. Gresham is kind of the veteran steadying influence of the group. He's had some lingering injury issues, but he believes in what they're building here. And, you know, everybody read the story that he turned down 4 years and $23 million or whatever, $12 million guaranteed from an NFL team to come back and sign for, you know, cheap with the Cardinals. So that's the idea right now. In Arian's offense, they don't really use the tight end as a receiving weapon. I mean, there will be a game where a tight end catches two touchdowns, you know, and those are the only two touchdowns they score all season, and it's probably one of only, you know, 20 catches they have all season. So, but they use Larry Fitzgerald as their big slot, you know, tight end receiver. And he, you know, we joke on the side a lot. He's the best tight end on the roster now. You know, he's not as athletically gifted as he once was, but he's the best route runner maybe in the league. And he does a great job of creating separation despite, you know, kind of downgrading physically as the years have gone on. But that, you know, that's a good point. The tight end position is one where there's not a lot of names, but the expectations from the offense are so low at that position that they're basically, you know, asked to block a lot and then every once in a while just catch short passes when, you know, the rest of the defense is focused in on either Michael Floyd, John Brown, Larry Fitzgerald, or David Johnson.
Seth, an interesting move that the Cardinals did that kind of had me scratching my head a little bit, but I'd be scratching my head if any team did this, and that is having two quarterbacks on the practice squad. I know you wrote about it this week. Explain what you think the thinking is for why they chose to use two of the positions on the practice squad at quarterback.
You know, I think there's a combination of things. They're throwing everything at the wall that they can to see what sticks. They've had a kind of a weird developmental system where a guy gets a regular season and then a training camp, and then if they don't stick, they just move on. And then I'm kind of hypothesizing, and this is just me, I don't have any, you know, inside information on this. I'm kind of hypothesizing that they're trying to give a look of what Jimmy Garoppolo is with Aaron Murray, and then, you know, because he just doesn't fit the archetype of quarterback that Bruce Arians always talks about. You know, he likes bigger guys that can move a little bit in the pocket, push the ball down the field. Those aren't necessarily Aaron's strengths. That's more along the lines of what Zach Dysart is, but he's been a guy that's been available for years in the NFL, and you know, ever since he was drafted in 2013 by the Broncos, he's bounced around to, I believe the Cardinals are his sixth team. So it's not like, you know, the Cardinals have not had the opportunity to sign him. So I was hypothesizing today, actually, that I think it's just to give the offense a look at a Jimmy Garoppolo type and then use Dysart in the Jameis Winston mold. And then we'll know in 2 weeks what their true intentions are after they play New England and Tampa Bay, if these guys are still on the practice squad or if they've been rotated out.
Last one for you, Seth. Getting ready for Sunday Night Football here, week one, hosting the Patriots. What's the biggest thing you're going to be looking for in this game?
I think it has to be how the Cardinals cover the tight ends. The Patriots have built a monster offense. Obviously, they're missing the engine of that offense in Tom Brady. But Jimmy Garoppolo has loved the tight ends in the preseason, and you have to remember that in 2014, the Arizona Cardinals were atrocious at defending tight ends. They were slightly better last year, but there were a couple games where they were taken advantage of by tight ends. They brought in Tyvon Branch to help with that. They have, you know, Tyrann Mathieu is now healthy again to continue to grow with that. That's going to be the key, is can they stop the New England tight ends? They have, you know, obviously Gronkowski, everybody knows, but bring in Martellus Bennett and another, you know, weapon for that position. It's going to be key to the Arizona Cardinals' victory. And, you know, I don't think the Jimmy Garoppolo factor is as big as a edge in the Cardinals' advantage as everybody wants to say it is, because he's going to be keying on, you know, the Gronk, Edelman, and Bennett trio to kind of be his security blanket in this game and keep them out of trouble.
Seth Cox, revengeofthebirds.com is the website, part of the SB Nation, and he's on Twitter at SCoxFB. Seth, really appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks as always, Nate. I look forward to it throughout the season.
Stick around. We got the coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am an IA, and I'm not. From the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, little better than one-to-one touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott could be a huge plus for them, but that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Mike Mularkey. It goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to fit. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team, but that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? You don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like Mike Blark. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk, okay. But he's not bad. This David Johnson's pretty good. They want to run the ball well, and if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. They're going to play great defense. You know, typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, what you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship-caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bills team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength of the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do. More so than any team in the league, they morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you. And we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second win during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere it's, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second win kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've played the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season. them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience, one team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And also, maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.